Now, Advent is, in theory, my favorite sort of Christian holiday time. I don't know if many of you celebrate Advent. Does anybody have the chocolate calendar? You eat all of the chocolates on day 13, right? Or some of you have the Advent wreath, and in an Advent wreath, there's typically 4 or 5 candles. And the idea with the Advent wreath is that you set it out in a sort of lovely space, and then the month leading up to Christmas, every Sunday you light one candle and gather the whole family around, and no one's looking at their phones, and everyone's just staring at one another in love and adoration, expectation of all things good and holy in the universe, right? That's the idea of Advent. And in theory, I think it's absolutely amazing. In practice, though, my Advent has been a complete disaster. I don't know about any of you, but I thought that it was starting off really strong because the day after Thanksgiving, our family, we sort of went gung-ho. We did the day after Thanksgiving chop down a Christmas tree thing. So we had to gather all the junk out of the basement, and I found my Advent wreath, and I thought to myself, aha, finally, I am ahead of the game. And so I set the thing on the table, and I looked at it, and I felt really excited, but the only problem was I didn't have candles for it. And somehow that took me a really long time to remedy, so the first Sunday of Advent was gone. Now, midway into week one, I was talking to some friends about sort of my sadness that my slacker Advent hadn't really started off super well. And the next day, my dear friend Diane brings me Advent candles. She's so kind. And they're like proper Advent candles, the right color, and they're this special size, and I thought they were super awesome. My only problem was is that the Advent candles didn't fit into the Advent wreath. And so I was convinced that I would have time to somehow like look on Pinterest and figure out how to make a little candle fit into a big wreath, but I didn't, and so that was the second Sunday of Advent. By week 2.5, I thought to myself, Julia, you need to lower the bar. So I went and I just grabbed 4 votive candles, like the kind that you use to warm food. And I was like, I am gonna do this if it kills me. And so I set them up on my little dining room table and I light 2 of them, and probably 30 seconds later, my dryer buzzer goes off. And I don't know what I did, but by the time I came back, it was like 6 hours later and the candles were completely burnt out. That was my 2.5 weeks of Advent. Now it gets worse because last Sunday was the 3rd week of Advent, right? And I have no memory of what I did. All I know is I didn't light the candle because it's still sitting on the table, completely unlit. And here we are, friends. It's the 4th Sunday of Advent. And to be honest with you, I think I cannot go home and light the candle because the Christmas tree I got the day after Thanksgiving is so dead that if you just look at it sideways, it drops like thousands of needles just to spite you. And I'm afraid that if I light anything, the whole house is going to go up in flames. So all of that to say, I don't know, maybe most of you are way better at this stuff than I am, sort of preparing your heart for the season. Or maybe you find yourselves in a situation like me where we kind of realize, man, it's hard to get here, isn't it? But look at you, we showed up. So well done, everyone. Well done, me. We made it to church. It's the 4th Sunday of Advent. We're going to do this thing no matter what. Thank you. Exactly. We all deserve an applause, don't we? It's hard. It can be hard work. And so we come here today, this last Sunday of Advent, all joking aside, to spend a little bit of time again in preparation for the celebration of the coming of Jesus. And I'm going to take a look at just the first few lines of John chapter 1. This is John's prologue to his gospel. And for those of you who aren't familiar, John would have been a friend to Jesus, an eyewitness to his ministry, but also a dear friend. And he's writing this gospel after all of the other 3 have been written. It's later in John's life, maybe the year 80 or 90 after the death of Christ. And John is reflecting back on his friend. And he's reflecting back on everything that he's seen and the things that have completely turned John's life upside down. This is what we read. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it. Now, in just these few simple lines of John's opening to his gospel, he tells us some of the most core and profound and even poetic beliefs that are orthodox to you and I as Christians. He tells us, first of all, that Jesus is the beginning of all things. Jesus is the origin of everything. In here, he tells us that Jesus is the meaning and the purpose for our life. And finally, he tells us that Jesus is the revelation of the grace and the truth of God. This last Sunday of Advent, we are doing exactly what John was doing when he was writing his gospel. We are looking forward in anticipation to God putting on flesh, making his dwelling among us through the birth of Jesus. Would you pray with me? Father, we just ask for your continued presence to be with us as I teach. I pray, God, your power on these words. We thank you that you've come near to us, Lord, and we desire to draw near to you, Jesus. Would you bless our time together? In Jesus' name, amen. Now, what I want to do with these five verses is maybe something a little bit different than what you've typically heard when you've listened to a sermon on this. What we're going to look at is four key Greek words that we can find in these five verses. And the reason that I'm going to do that is twofold. The first reason is this, because learning another language is super cool, even if you're only learning four words of it, right? The second reason is this. Is that very often, as Christians, when we read texts like John 1 that we've heard many times, over and over and over, they can begin to lose a little bit of their meaning. Do you know what I mean? Things that we learn by rote memory sometimes lack the substance of the thing itself. It's like this. When I was 8 years old, we had this thing in my house, and it was called a telephone. Super cool. It was attached to the wall with this cord. You guys, anybody remember the telephone? Attached to the wall. You couldn't really go far. If you had 20 feet, you were really lucky. And so when people called you on the telephone, you didn't automatically know who it was. So you couldn't just pick up the phone and be like, "Yo, sup?" You had to say something like a little bit more formal. My father was an officer in the Air Force, so we sort of had a script. And when people called our house when I was 8 or 9, here's what I said. "Hello, this is the Silliman's residence. This is Julia. How may I help you?" Now, the problem was when I was 8 or 9, there were about 3 things total that I had memorized. One of them was that little phone script, okay? The second thing that I had memorized was the Pledge of Allegiance. And the third thing was the Lord's Prayer. And I vividly remember a time being a kid, picking up the phone. I don't know if any of you wrapped yourself up in the phone cord. If you talked on the phone, you'd wrap yourself up like a mummy. And some of you remember, right? And I remember picking up the phone and saying this, "Silliman's residence, to the flag of the United States, of to him be the power and glory forever." Amen? Like, I don't even know what I'm saying. It's rote memory. And so what I want us to do this morning is get a little bit underneath the things that we think we know about this little bit in John so that we can understand it at a deeper level. Let me reread it to you. "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God," or "the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning. Through him all things were made. Without him nothing was made that has been made. In him was life, and that life was the light of all mankind. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness has not overcome it." The first Greek word that I want to introduce you to is what's translated into the phrase "in the beginning," and the Greek word is this, arche. You might think architect or archetype, right? And it doesn't just mean beginning per se. There's a little more oomph to it. It is meant to convey the beginning of the beginning, or the source, the origin. What John is doing just in this first phrase of his gospel is he's taking us all the way back, outside even of human history, to the very beginning of the world itself. All of the other gospel writers begin and they drop us into different points in human history. John goes all the way back to the very beginning. As a matter of fact, many of you may have noticed that this text in John has a bit of a similarity to the very first verse we have in our Bible in Genesis. I'll read it to you. It says this in Genesis 1, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters." Now, if we listen to that next to John 1, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God, and the Word was with God," we're seeing that what John is doing is he's telling us is that when we see Jesus, we see God, the creator of the entire universe. He's telling us Jesus was not merely a prophet. He wasn't just a guru. He wasn't a wise teacher. He wasn't like me or you. He wasn't somebody that you could quote and put on a sunset picture and make a meme out of it. He's saying that Jesus was there in the beginning of all things. Jesus is God, is John's claim. And now he's responding fairly directly to a group of folks in the early church, this group of folks called the Ebionites, who were teaching something different than the fact that God was fully human and fully divine. They were giving up that tension, which many people in our world give up as well. And they were saying Jesus wasn't divine. As a matter of fact, they taught Jesus was born of Mary and Joseph, and he was more like a good prophet guy. And he was the Messiah, they said, because he obeyed Jewish law. But John knew different. John knew that Jesus was not merely a prophet, that Jesus was God in the flesh, and that he was Messiah not because he obeyed the law, but because he fulfilled the law. John is doubling down here on the identity of Jesus. He's saying when we look at Jesus, through him we have access and we see God. I don't know if any of you have ever played Memory. You know that game? It's a matching game. It's like 100 cards, maybe 50 pairs. It's a really embarrassing game to play, actually. Like, I sometimes get worried for myself when I play this game because I just can't ever figure out where anything is. But the idea is in our family, we have baby animal memory. And so you flip up one card and you're looking for the other card that's the match, right? So if you flip up cute baby seal over here, and you have the mental wherewithal to remember where the other card is, you flip up the other cute baby seal, and what's happening is the two things are a match. They replicate one to the other. And what John is telling us is that in Jesus, we have a match of who God is. That in Jesus, we have access to God. In Jesus, we have access to the designer of the entire universe, to the beginning and to the very origin of all things. That's what John is saying in this first word. Now, let me make this really practical because I know maybe it seems a little bit out there for some of us. Have any of you ever built anything from IKEA? I'm feeling you. And you know, you look at the box and you're kind of excited because this thing is super cheap and you're like, man, that box probably only weighs like, I don't know, 35 pounds. You go to lift it up, the box weighs 350 pounds. Right there, you realize like, I don't know what I'm getting into. You spill the box out, there's like 150 screws in the box and each one of them are slightly different than the other, right? And it's like all of that pressed wood stuff, it's like they have chopped it up into 1-inch squares. And they just want you to stick the whole thing back together. But that's okay because you're excited about your IKEA purchase. And so you open up the manual, and the IKEA manual is full of stick figures. There's no words in it. And my favorite IKEA manual stick figure is the confused man. Confused man looks like this. I identify with confused man. But you go like gung-ho and you think, I'm gonna do this thing, and by 2 a.m. your fingers are bleeding and you're crying and you have no idea what's going on, but you think you've got your dresser put together, and so you put it up and you open up the drawers and they're upside down. And the doors are on the back of the thing and one of the legs is on top and it's a total disaster. And there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. And what do you want in that moment? You want the person who designed the thing in your living room to tell you how to fix it. You want the maker. What John is telling us, my friends, is that in Jesus, we have access to our Maker. He's telling us where we go to when we get stuck. He's telling us who it is that knows how we're made and what we're for. Now, where do you go when you're stuck? You know, a lot of us, if we're lucky, if we've got something hard going on in our life, maybe you've got a brother or a sister you can call. Maybe you've got a friend or a small group leader, if you're lucky. A lot of people go to YouTube. And it's not just like, you know, YouTube, how to play the ukulele or how to change the oil in my car. It's like YouTube, how to make a friend, how to help people like me. You know the things that people pray to Google? Depression, help. Mom, drinking too much. Resource. What does cancer mean? You see, what John is telling us is that when we're stuck, when everything's a wreck, when we don't know what to do, and when we're really desperate, when we really just need someone to tell us how to fix this thing, we have access to the Maker. John is telling us we have access through Christ to God Himself. Now, the second Greek word that we're going to take a look at is the word that actually means word. It's translated like this: in the beginning was the Word. And the Greek word for this is probably familiar to some of you. It's the Greek word logos. Think logic, maybe. But again, our translation of it is like a little lackluster because it doesn't just mean word. It means something more than that. It means something more like the unifying principle or the meaning behind everything. The Greeks loved philosophy, okay? And I want you to imagine them as a group of, like, you know, hipsters drinking kombucha, and they're sitting around and they're asking, like, what does it all mean? And the answer to that question for them would have been logos. That's the thing that makes sense of everything. And so what John is saying to us is that in the beginning, logos, in the beginning, Jesus was the unifying principle. He was the meaning of everything. He was the purpose behind everything. When you want to know what you're for, John is telling us, it's Jesus that holds the key. Now, some of you here, I'll get really practical, some of you here in your 20s, right? Maybe you're home from Christmas, you're home on Christmas vacation from university, or maybe you've been deployed and you're home on a break. Perhaps you live at home and you're working, or you're going to community school and you're trying to figure out what to do with life, right? You're trying to figure out, what am I gonna major in? You're trying to figure out, how am I gonna make enough money to, like, make my life something big? You're trying to answer huge questions about what am I made for and what am I gonna do? And if I'm gonna drop 40 grand on college, God forbid, what should I study? And you're trying to do all of that on your own, and you're 21, which obviously is like the best time to figure out your whole life. Or not. You know, what John would say is, he says, come to Jesus. He knows everything. He knows who you are. He knows your meaning. He knows what you're made for. You can take every personality test in the book. You can know you're like, you know, I'm an ABC and I'm a number 4 and I'm an ENTLQP, whatever. Like, it's so good. I know my strength finders and I've got all this stuff, and all that stuff is really good. But at the end of the day, Jesus knows you and He made you. Look, if you're in and around your 20s, I want to invite you into our young adult community called VC20. It's here at the church. It's a group of people your own age who are learning to discern the voice of God in their own life. Everyone's asking these same questions, and instead of asking them on your own, you get to come together, have a great time with great people, and learn to press into the meaning and purpose of God for you. Starting February, they're actually going to be meeting weekly, which is really exciting. But on Christmas Eve, especially if you're in and around your 20s, the invitation is open to all. Our VC20 group is going to be hosting our 10 p.m. candlelight Christmas Eve service. It would be great to see many of you there. 10 o'clock on Christmas Eve, it's a great way to get connected with other people who are asking the same kinds of what does it all mean questions that you're asking. The next Greek word is this one, and it's the word that we translate into life. In him was life. The Greek word that we're looking at here is Zoe. Some of you are named Zoe. This is probably why you're named Zoe. In him was life. And again, it's not exactly, it doesn't convey the meaning that the Greek would have meant. The Greek meaning of the word Zoe has to do with life, all of life, the fullness of life, the essence of life, the life force itself. Not the details of life. The details of life, the Greeks had another word for it. It was bios. That's like, you know, the little things. Oh, is that thing alive or dead? I don't know, kick it. That's kind of bios life. Zoe life was big. It's like, look up. It's the thing that makes everything move, the thing that makes everything breathe. That's Zoe life, and that's what John says Jesus has. It's not the details, it's the big picture. And you know what many of us do in life? My friends, many of us focus so much of life on the details, don't we? You're just like, it's like, what do I want to wear? How much money do I want to have? What does my Facebook page look like? And how can I get a better job and a bigger car? We focus on all the details. It feels to me like, you know, we just are so distracted by screens. It's kind of the same thing. And I'll be honest, if you're 16-year-old and you're walking down, you know, you fly to stairs at home with your screen and you're not paying attention, you walk into a wall, it's actually kind of funny for a moment, right? Like, oh, haha, maybe you want to pay attention to the big picture. But if you do it in your 20s and your 30s and your 40s and your 50s and you're walking around and you're focused on the details of life, one day you will look up and it's not a pretty picture, is it? You look around and you go, I have all of the little things I thought I wanted in life. But I'm alone. And people don't like me. Because I'm kind of a jerk. You focused on the details and not on the big picture of life. It's the same metaphor as you can climb a ladder, but you better make sure it's leaning against the right wall. Jesus comes to you and he says, I want to give you full life. C.S. Lewis says it this way, we are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition. It's like the bios of life. When infinite joy is offered us, like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum, because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. He says, we are far too easily pleased. Do any of you find yourself far too easily pleased? And this Christmas, do any of you find yourself far too preoccupied with the details, forgetting the really important big picture things in life, like character and purpose? John tells us that Jesus comes and he comes with full life. And the last Greek word that I want to highlight is the word that we translate into the word light. It says, in him was the life, and that life was the light of men. And light is translated from the Greek word phos. You might think phosphorescence. And again, the translation is kind of a little bit slim, because what phos implies is not just light, but illumination, radiance. It implies to make something manifest. And my favorite definition of the word light is, or of phos, is that it is a picture of something that sheds light, that it spills light everywhere. And that's what John is telling us about Jesus. Everywhere he goes, he trips and he's like spilling his stuff. He spills the light of Christ. Everywhere he goes, it sheds out from him. Now, I have this amazing non-shedding dog that sheds a lot. A lot. And everywhere Cosmo goes, Cosmo leaves a part of himself. There is no corner so deep and dark in my house that pieces of Cosmo do not get there. There is no space in anywhere that I inhabit that little clouds of Cosmo fuzz do not float into those spaces. Everywhere Cosmo goes, Cosmo leaves a part of himself. And in kind of a silly way, I think it's a good picture. Because what the scripture tells us is that the light of Jesus goes everywhere. And then it tells us this, that it's not overcome by the darkness. Now, this world can be a really dark place, right? We come here to church and we're all kind and friendly with one another, but I know we all come today with our own heavinesses. We come with pain, we come with diagnoses that we know are gonna take a long time to work out. We come with a brother or sister who needs a lot more help than we're able to give them because they're stuck in addiction and we don't know what to do. We come with marriages that aren't anything like what we ever thought they'd look like, and we don't know how we got here and we're exhausted by it all. We come with our own depression, our own anxiety, our own loneliness this time of year. The world can feel dark, and not just our own lives, but the world everywhere can feel dark, right? You read the news, you look at what's happening in the world, and sometimes we begin to wonder, what is going on? And in the midst of that place, John tells us something that is both prophetic and true, and it is not a silly Christian pat answer. It is not thoughts and prayers instead of prayerful action, but it is this, that there is no darkness that the light of Christ cannot overcome. There is no hole so deep. There is no refugee camp so far away, no mountain so high, that the light of Jesus cannot penetrate it. You know, if you want to do something this year, you think it's almost a new year, maybe you should start your 2018 resolution, you know, what is that, you make a resolution. You should do that today for 2018, because then you're like super likely to keep it because we've only got a week left. So here's a great 2018 resolution. It's to do something in partnership with the light of Christ in the world. And a really easy way to do this today is right after the service, go into the e-hallway and connect with Megan and learn about what she's going to be doing. Because in refugee camps, there's a lot of darkness. But there's also a lot of light. She's at the tail end of doing some fundraising. And if some of you have never been involved in supporting missions, either by prayer or by financial support, I'd really encourage you to go visit with her after the service and be a part of moving forward the light of Christ in the world. John tells us that if we want to know God, we need to look at Jesus. He takes all of these big idea Greek words, it's like 100,000 pounds of description, and he pours them into this person of Jesus Christ, this man who walked the earth, and he says, in this man is the way to the Father. In this man, Jesus, is ultimate meaning and purpose. In this man, Jesus, you can find the way to true life. That is what John is telling us. Now, let me get practical again for a moment, because John is focusing this text on the revelation of God through Jesus. But I do think It implies actually a very simple question that any one of you could ask yourself this morning. And it doesn't matter if you're you could be 13, you could be 30, you could be 83. And the question that John implies is this: do you know Jesus like John knew Jesus? Do you love Jesus like John so clearly loves Jesus? You know, have you ever seen a parent who's just so great with their kid, and it feels inspiring to watch them, and you kind of go home to your own kids, and maybe you think to yourself, I want to be a little bit more like them, right? Or maybe you see an older married couple, and they just haven't lost the spark, and they treat one another with dignity and kindness and love, and you think to yourself, I want to be more like that in my relationship, right? A few weeks ago, I was volunteering. I was with my friend Rachel. Rachel's been a part of this church for forever. She started a lot of the ministries that we have here, and she's always putting herself in places where she can be a little bit of light to the darkness. And I was with her at a family shelter, and I was watching Rachel. I was watching Rachel look people in the eye and give people dignity and love people and treat people with respect and honor. And I was thinking to myself, I want to be a little bit more like Rachel. Because I think if I could be a little bit more like Rachel, I'd actually be a little bit more like Jesus. And what we can do when we read this text from John is we can feel the love that he has for his friend. We can feel the transformation that he's experienced, right? He's not giving us head knowledge. He's pouring out his heart in worship. And we can look at John and we can think to ourselves, I wonder what it would be like if my relationship with Jesus was a little bit more like that. And the reason that this is important, my friends, is because that's what we're all doing here. I mean, I don't know why you get out of bed and come to church. And some of you, your parents make you come, and you're like, I don't know why either, to be honest. But we don't come just to kind of like high-five each other real quick, go in and get out. We don't come together just to like listen to something and learn something a little bit new. We come together to fall deeper and deeper in love with Jesus. And we come together to remind one another we are loved by God. And you can't do that at home listening to just a podcast and downloading some music. I mean, I love doing that, but that's not the same thing as church. Because in church, you gotta rub up against people. There's so many people here. That's what church is. It's practicing patience and self-control in the parking lot. Because you have to. Because you're going to see these people next week, right? We come together to listen to music that we wouldn't normally listen to hear stories that we wouldn't usually like to listen to. We come together from all sorts of different parts of the world to be the church together, to learn to love one another, because it is through one another that you learn more about Jesus. We want to be a community of people who falls deeply in love with God. So a couple really quick encouragements in that direction. How is it that we can grow our friendship with Christ? How is it that we can grow our passion for Jesus? The first thing is simply this, is lean into him. Lean into Jesus. Lean into community. You know, sometimes when I say things like that, people will look back at me and they'll go like, I don't even know what you're talking about. Lean into God. What do you even mean? So pretend I said it like this. If I came to you and I was like, I want you to really lean into the calves. You'd be like, game on. I'm gonna spend some money there. I'm gonna spend some time there. I'm gonna dig in a little bit, right? Well, the idea is that we lean into Jesus, that we come together in community just like you're doing, that we learn things like, what does it mean to be people who pray? What does it mean to read the Bible and understand it? I know some of us come to scripture, we go like, I don't even know what it means. So we need to learn how to read the Bible, because the Bible is what tells us who Jesus is. We need to learn how to serve and be served. So we come together in community to learn those things. Now, we can learn that here on a Sunday morning or on a Saturday night, but we can learn that especially well in our small groups. That's why we drive the idea of being in small group community. It's not because it's like some magic pill or anything. It's just because it's like where we get together and we learn to do this stuff. And some of you may be already involved in a small group, but for some of you, it might just feel like a little weird. I like going to someone's house and I don't know them. I don't want to do that. So we've got other options. Starting in January, we've got something called Midpoint. And Midpoint is basically on-site small groups. You don't have to go to somebody's house that you don't know. You come here to the church. And we do Bible study together. We learn how to pray. We learn how to hear the voice of God. We learn how to read the Bible. We learn how to serve and all of this stuff. You can do that at Midpoint. So I'd really encourage you, if you're not connected into community here, after the service, you can go out to our community life area and they can let you know more about our small group opportunities. So we need to lean into Jesus, to lean into community, and I'd also say we need to lean into quietness. Now, this one is the kicker, because we are really bad at being quiet. And one of the things actually that is somewhat concerning to me as a pastor is I can't tell you how many times I'll ask someone, when was the last time that you were intentionally still and just becoming aware of the presence of God in your life? Intentional stillness, and people will be like a shower count? No, that's not what I'm talking about. Like just when you're intentionally quieted yourself down, people go like, I don't know, like never? What are you talking about? When I'm dead? And we wonder sometimes why God feels so far away, why we can't hear his voice, why our faith doesn't feel as full or as alive like John's does. But many times it's because we really have no space at all to be connected to Christ. And I don't mean connected through action or through service. Those are great ways to be connected through Christ. But there is something very particular about quieting your soul, about shutting up, about reminding yourself that what you believe to be true is that the light of Christ is present to you and that he is a good shepherd who wants to speak to his sheep. And so you just sit in that space and lean into the presence of God. And if we are not practicing that kind of relationship to Jesus, my friends, we're like skimming the surface. So I'd encourage you this year in a couple of ways. I'd encourage you to lean into community, to lean into Christ, and to lean into this listening relationship with Jesus. In the first chapter of John, verse 14, he ends with a summary statement, and he says, "The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son who came from the Father, full of grace and full of truth." And this is how Jesus comes to us today still. He comes full of grace and full of truth. I love that Jesus is a truth teller. He's not mean. But I don't like it when people lie to me. You know, have you ever had somebody say, "You just look fantastic in that"? And you're like, "You are just a liar. Never trust you again in my life." Jesus doesn't lie. He comes with his truth, and he comes to our metaphorical living room, and he looks at our metaphorical IKEA disaster, and he says, like, "Wow, yeah, this is not at all how it was meant to be. It's actually been put together completely upside down. Everything is discombobulated. It's actually a wreck. And I don't think you're ever going to be able to afford to make it right." He comes to us with truth. And he comes to us with grace. In the same moment, he says, "But you know what? Let's do this." He says, "I've taken care of it." He says, "I paid your bill." And what Jesus would say to you is, he says, "I'm really keen to sit down with you. And we might have to take this thing apart a little bit. It might actually take some time. We're going to have to disassemble it. But what I'm going to do, Jesus says to you, is I'm going to sit with you and I'm going to rebuild it the right way because I love you and I made you and I designed you. That's what we are waiting for this fourth Sunday of Advent.